Good morning, Connecticut. And to our friends across the Sound, it's Director of Public Affairs, John Vokette. Thanks for tuning in to Connoisseur Media's award-winning public affairs program for the people, bringing you the latest information to help address concerns in our communities tied to youth, the economy, public health and safety, aging, education, and the environment. We're opening up the program discussing the latest statewide poll from Sacred Heart University's Institute for Public Policy and Civic Engagement with the CEO of their polling partner, Great Blue Research. We're going to hear a bit about where state residents stand on the governor's handling of the COVID-19 pandemic, as well as several other issues reflected in this new polling. Then we're going to zip through several calls with representatives of three nonprofits, Live Free, Al's Angels, and the Westport Pal, all collaborating on a free and family-friendly Winter Wonderland event coming up in Westport. We're going to learn a bit about each of these three organizations and why it's so important to bring your family and, heck, bring the whole neighborhood down to enjoy this December 4th Winter Wonderland at the Westport Pal Ice Arena. Then we're going to close with the first part of a series we're producing called Open Arms, Open Hearts, Connecticut's Role in the Afghan Refugee Crisis. We're going to chat with IRIS, the Integrated Refugee and Immigrant Services, about how that agency is coordinating with grassroots groups across Western Connecticut to help get Afghan refugees resettled and how you can help. We'll be back with these segments and more on the award-winning For the People with me, John Vokette, right after this. You know, November is National Foster Care Month, and as individuals and families continue to emerge from the long-term challenges of the pandemic, there's an urgent need for both foster and adoptive families here. Wheeler recruits, trains, and supports foster families and prepares individuals and families for the adoptive process through a 10-week virtual course called Trauma-Informed Parenting for Safety and Permanence Model Approach to Partnerships and Parenting. And you can take it because a new class is forming in January. So to learn more about Wheeler's foster care programs and how you can step up on behalf of a foster child in need of a permanent home, call 860-793-7277 or go to wheelerclinic.org. So it's been a while since we talked about Sacred Heart University's Institute for Public Policy and Civic Engagement through their College of Arts and Sciences. This organization, the Institute, conducts public policy research. They hold public forums and workshops and serve as a public policy learning incubator for students. But they also host statewide polls, which we've talked about a number of times here on the award-winning For the People. And their latest poll, which is finding strong support for COVID-19 response here in Connecticut, as well as a number of other important points, many of which we've discussed with other guests here on For the People. But one of the things we have not done was actually talked with one of the partners that Sacred Heart University uses. So I'm really pleased to make the acquaintance of Michael Vigent, who's with Great Blue Research, who I guess was the kind of the operational or the logistical arm of this version of the Sacred Heart University poll, right, Michael?
That is correct. And John, thanks for having me today.
So tell me a little bit about how the partnership between Great Blue Research and Sacred Heart University works. Is it a vendor technically situation? Do they put a bid out and you say, yes, we're interested in running a poll for you?
Yeah, so this actually, the first iteration of the poll went way back to 2001, where Sacred Heart and the earlier version of my company created a relationship, and we were doing national polling for many, many years around 2010. That first iteration kind of wrapped up, and then we, as President Petillo came in, he wanted to get the poll back up, and he reached out to us and said, hey, would you have an interest in continuing? And I'm a Sacred Heart alumni as well, so it was an easy request to say yes to. So this latest iteration of the poll started, I think it was right around 2016, and we've been conducting quarterly Connecticut statewide polls pretty much ever since. And in 2022, we will be doing every other quarter will be a national poll. So we're getting back into that national model as well. So excited about that. And we're covering, you name it, various topics. Every single quarter, we get together with the folks at Sacred Heart and determine what it is we are going to talk about and poll in that current quarter's poll, and then we get to it and go to work.
And this really, with the incubator, it really puts students in the driver's seat to some degree in both the ramp up to production of and delivery and data crunching after the fact, and why polling is so important for a student of public policy and civic engagement.
For sure. And so we actually, so I will go in, I'm the CEO of Great Blue Research. I actually work with the students a couple of times a year where we'll go in and we'll teach them the art of asking questions and how to utilize that data to get actionable results, whether it is for developing policy or how to react to the policy or how to use the information for building policy or adapting policy. And it's great. It's great to hear what they're learning and thinking about and working on. So we build it right into some of the class elements. But for the most part, the Great Blue Research Partnership, we're conducting the polls on their behalf. So we've got the tools and the resources right here in-house. So we're collecting all the data, analyzing it, but then we make the raw data available to the university as well for all the purposes you just described.
Well, another reason I'm excited to talk to you is because when we're talking a lot of times with the academics and the educators, we're just kind of reviewing the numbers and the interpretation of what they mean. But in terms of this poll, this was conducted October 14th through October 27th of this year, and it asked 1,000 Connecticut residents questions about a number of things, including Governor Ned Lamont and his handling of the COVID-19 pandemic, as well as a number of other subjects folks will hear about in a few minutes. But now we're looking at the population of the state of Connecticut and then the population of 1,000 Connecticut residents who thankfully agreed to be part of the poll and participated to the point where you were able to get enough data. So can you just in a nutshell explain to people that are listening, how do you interpolate the input from 1,000 people to kind of correspond to the entire population of the state of Connecticut, or does that even matter?
It really doesn't matter. It does and it does not. So there's, you know, while we're limited on time, I'll give you the high level overview. It really boils down to what's called random sampling. And we want to make sure that we get a proportional sampling of folks throughout the state. So there's three key areas that we focus on. Four, actually, we make sure we have a good mix of gender, age, income, and then the county in which folks are from. And I always use the analogy, when your doctor tests your cholesterol, he or she doesn't take out all of the blood from your body. They take out a sampling of the blood from your body to test your cholesterol. There's some margin for error with that, of course, and the same applies with sampling. Many presidential elections represent 1,000, 1,500, 2,000 completes nationally. Now, if you're making sure that your sampling is really representative of the populations based on voting districts and all those sorts of things, you should have within, you know, a reasonable margin for error, those results are reliable. And so, you know, there's quality control components built into it, but with 1,000 completes, we have a margin for error of plus or minus 3.02%. And we'll talk about that as it pertains to some of the ratings here,
sure.
But the confidence level is also equally important. And this is a 95% confidence level, which means that if we went out and replicated the study 100 times, 95 out of 100 times that we conducted that 1,000 sample, even if it was 1,000 new people, every single study within the state of Connecticut, the results would fall usually within that plus or minus 3% on either side.
Well, that's great. So this poll started off talking about general approval ratings for the governor, but then it started drilling into his performance during the COVID-19 pandemic. So anecdotally, a lot of us who just kind of consume the media and kind of keep our own eyes on the ball, the general feeling was that Lamont did a fairly good job, if not a great job, in certain moments during the pandemic. Tell us a little bit about what you guys found.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think there's a couple of variables that go into rating the governor, rating the response of COVID, and I believe that all starts with you know, our early tracking questions that we ask in every single poll in our statewide polls, and that is the quality of life in the state of Connecticut. And we saw 69%, I'll just use some rounded numbers here, 69% reported their quality of life in the state is either excellent or good. Now, that number, importantly, is down from 73% in April of 2021. Mm. So right out of the gate, we're about 4 percentage points lower in the quality of life that folks were reporting. An increased number of folks, importantly, said that their quality of life improving in the state, they're doing that at a lower rate than they did in April. So overall, from April until October, fewer folks were saying their quality of life was improving, and then fewer folks were saying that their quality of life was excellent or good. Now, you take that into the governor's approval rating. His approval rating dropped about 5 percentage points from April to October, moving from 55.7 to 50.5, and that's the approval rating. Obviously, that's higher among Democrats, a little lower among Republicans. But where I really view how he is judged and where his ratings are, to your earlier point, when you start to look at his overall addressing and handling of COVID-19, this is where I think he did a really good job. Regardless of Democrat or Republican or somewhere in the middle, we saw about two-thirds of respondents reported to approve of the way Governor Lamont was either A, handling his communication to the public at 67.6%, or B, his overall response and handling of the COVID-19 crisis at 66% in our October poll. Now, there were two other areas that we also measured. There was four total that we measured for the governor as it pertains to the COVID plan. The third was addressing a plan for Connecticut residents. That came in a little bit lower at 52% approval, and then addressing a plan for businesses in the state at 49.5% approval. Hmm. Now, this is, in being fair to the governor, the plans, in many ways, this has been a moving target, whether you're a business owner, a parent, a single person, or you're running the state. This has been a moving target, and this isn't something that folks have dealt with before. When we measure nationally or locally any of our clients, usually communication and overall satisfaction, those are two areas that are really telling. And so while the plans and the target might be moving, overall, folks are saying governor is doing a great job communicating with us those changes and that movement, as well as coming up with a plan that works for as many as possible.
Okay. Now, this poll also kind of then veered into a couple of other areas. The lion's share of it was on the governor and his performance and reactions to various things in the pandemic, including school support, mask mandates, and things like that. I know you also touched upon support for mail-in ballots and early voting, but you also quizzed people on recreational cannabis usage, and by October 14th, we were several months into the legalization situation. What's a snapshot of your look at recreational cannabis usage?
Yeah, so that was interesting. We've been tracking, kind of the legalization process. So we've been tracking this for years. And so when we broke it down, we saw 54% of October respondents indicated that the recent legalization of the recreational cannabis had no change on their support for the recreational usage. And we also saw about 71% of respondents indicated that their use of cannabis had stayed the same after legalization. Many of the early thoughts as we were going through polling prior to the legalization was the minute it becomes legal, everybody and their brother is going to be using it. It's going to result in a ton of crime. In many cases you hear the negatives, but 71% saying that their usage had remained the same doesn't mean that they were using before and they're using now. It also meant utilization is also non-utilization in this case. So those who are not using it are still not using it in many cases. So it wasn't a big movement in terms of support. The support didn't really change. And it doesn't appear that there's a ton of major movement in one direction or the other since it became legalized.
Great. And to bring our conversation to a close for now, Dan, because it sounds like with the ramp up of more polling, I'm going to be talking to you a little bit more in the future, which is going to be great, maybe in conjunction with some other folks from Sacred Heart to create an even better perspective of future polls. But as we wrap it up, charitable giving, I mean, we kind of heard across the board, not just through various polls and tracking, but from the charities themselves, that a lot of them did very, very well. They all went into this pandemic situation completely scared out of their wits that we were going to face this wholesale closing of all kinds of different nonprofits. Tell us a little bit about what you discovered.
Yeah, I think importantly, 3 out of 4 respondents did strongly agree or agree with the following statement. It's important that Americans give money and or time to charities. And we saw 13%, a very small number, said that they would rather give to large charities versus smaller ones. So there's an overall belief among Connecticut residents that, you know, giving time or money to charities remains important. And it sounds like, you know, more focusing on smaller or health-related focused missions, if you will. We saw 32% reported it's more important for Americans to volunteer for charities, while a similar frequency at 30.3% believe it is more important for Americans to donate. So right around 30% volunteer, right around 30% donating funds. We saw 31.8% indicated they volunteer and donate the same amount post-pandemic as they did pre-pandemic, which I think is important. And then the last piece was 44.7% currently, and those who prior to the pandemic at 43.8% indicated preference of donating to charities with a health-focused mission, followed by charities focused on environment and animals, and then rounding out the top three, human services at 31.5%.
Very good. Lots of information, but very intriguing and much more reason for people to go and check out this poll for themselves through sacredheart.edu/poll results. Our guest this morning, Michael Vigent, is CEO of Great Blue Research, who is equipping Sacred Heart University's Institute for Public Policy and Civic Engagement to actually conduct the nuts and bolts of these polls. This latest one conducted in late October, touching on several of the subjects we discussed this morning, as well as many others. And we hope you'll go and check out and learn more about what this collaboration is doing between Great Blue Research and Sacred Heart University. In the meantime, Michael, great to meet you, and thank you so much for great to meet you, and thank you. So as you heard from our program introduction this morning, we are so pleased to be welcoming three guests to this midpoint segment, starting with Dan Vieira, who's on the line with us. And we are promoting a Winter Wonderland event that's coming up in Westport on December 4th from 4 to 9 at the Westport Pal Rinks at Longshore. There's going to be skating, carolers, a bonfire, crafts, cocoa, get your photo taken with Santa, and all kinds of other really cool stuff. And the best part is this family-friendly family event is going to be benefiting three nonprofits. Of course, the Westport Police Athletic League, an organization who has been a guest here on the award-winning For the People before, called Al's Angels, and a brand new friend who I am introducing now, and he is Dan Vieira. He is the founder of Live Free, and Live Free is providing assistance and support to pediatric cancer patients and their families by offering unforgettable experiences, whether it's a ball game, concert, amusement park, or anything in between, I guess including some ice skating and photos with Santa, Dan. You guys do a great job, and it all is born out of a very deep and important personal experience, right?
Correct. In 2015, my daughter Lauren, or Liv, was diagnosed with leukemia when she was just 16 months old. We quickly realized that there were a lot of families like ours that were going through pediatric, you know, facing pediatric cancer, and kind of just needed a break from treatment and just to enjoy some quality family time, much of which is lost when you're shuffling between chemotherapy treatments, doctor's visits, and all the effects of childhood cancer.
Mm-hmm. And at what point did you decide you wanted to actually go from trying to support your daughter to going into a situation where you wanted to provide the answer to wishes for many children who were in a situation like she was?
It was almost instantly. We didn't really know too much about pediatric cancer. And when my daughter was diagnosed, we received so much support from friends and family, but also complete strangers. And we felt an obligation and almost a duty to give back almost instantly. So I would say within 3 or 4 months of her diagnosis, we had started Live Free. And her treatment was about 2.5 years long. And throughout those 2.5 years, we had started small. And, you know, since she's doing very well now, but we still continue the mission of Live Free.
So tell me how it works. How do you find and qualify the people that you're going to either surprise or line up with these answers to their wishes?
Sure. So we don't like to call them wishes. We like to give them experiences, mostly because Live Free really focuses on the whole family, because we know that pediatric cancer doesn't just focus on the one child. It, you know, siblings, grandmas, grandpas, moms and dads are also deeply affected. So we try to regain that sense of normalcy for the whole family. And how that happens is we'll usually reach out to the local hospitals and we'll ask them if they have any families that they think can use a break from their treatments and really use a fun experience to kind of, you know, reset themselves and give them something to look forward to, sense of hope.
And tell me maybe one of the latest experiences that you were able to deliver.
We just sent a family to the Lion King on Broadway, as Broadway just opened up from the pandemic. And this was a really special story because there were two young boys that they were twins, and they both had a genetic disease that caused them to have retinoblastoma. So both of them were fighting cancer of the eye at the same time. And grandma really wanted to do something special with them. So she was able to bring them to Broadway and see The Lion King.
Oh, that's great. How about in terms of the most challenging or ambitious that you've had to make happen for somebody?
The most challenging was there was a young girl that we, her father was stationed in Kansas in the military about 2 years ago, and because of her treatment, he didn't have any leave left to come home and visit his daughter here in Connecticut for the holidays. So we were able to send the daughter and her mom out to Kansas to spend Christmas with her dad out in while he was stationed out in Kansas.
Oh, that's nice. So aside from getting resource and learning about individuals who you might be able to support through local pediatric hospitals, you also obviously would love to have folks helping to underwrite these experiences, as well as volunteers who might just be able to support Live Free and come in some capacity and do it. How do folks learn more about getting involved with your organization?
The best way to learn more about us and to get involved is to visit our website. It's www.livefreetoday.org. That's livefreetoday.org.
Very good. So, Dan, we're going to ask you to hang on for a while. We are going to meet some of the other nonprofit representatives who are part of this Winter Wonderland. And then we're going to circle back with you after we finish up chatting with them to give people a little bit more information. So hang tight and we'll reach out to Al from Al's Angels and our friend from Westport PAL. And then we'll be back to you. So hang on, and folks, hang for more details on this upcoming event. So it's been way too long, we decided, since we talked with Al DeGuido and Al's Angels, several years since we had the opportunity to chat with him on the program. Way too long, Al, and we're glad to have you back, especially to hear about collaborations like you're doing with Live Free and the Westport PAL with this event. But you've always been a real collaborator. So before we talk a little bit more, we just want to let people know that Al's Angels, which you can visit at ALSAngels.org, began about 24 years ago, and they have been providing support to children and families battling cancer, rare blood diseases, natural disasters, and severe financial hardship for now this almost quarter century. So, Al, briefly, how did this whole thing start for you?
Well, you know, I was at an event 25, 26 years ago where I was born in Brooklyn. I was a New York Giant fan, and a friend of mine had gotten a table for an event over New Jersey. And long story short, I didn't know what it was about. I thought I was just going to get some autographs from people like Phil Simms and Lawrence Taylor. The windup was, the woman who was running the event came out, and she introduced several women, and those women came up and said, "Hi, my name is Sally. My daughter's name is Christian, and she's dying of cancer, and we've been wiped out financially." And she left the stage in a room that was really, very noisy, got very, very quiet. Mm-hmm. And then the second two mothers came up and told the story, similar story about their children dying of cancer, being wiped out financially, losing all of their income, or having no money for food, for clothing, for gifts. Gifts was kind of like out and not even being considered. Mm-hmm. And I looked at my buddy Pete and I said, "Pete, what the hell is going on here? What's this all about? This is the United States of America." Mm-hmm. He said, "Well, I don't really know." I said, "Well, that's not really a good answer." And that night, on the way home, I'm a deeply religious person, and I got a message from God. And said, what if it were you? What if it was your child? So woke my wife up, and we started very, very small with helping children and families battling cancer and rare blood diseases. And, 25 years later, we help on an average close to 3,500 families, provide them with the Thanksgiving and Christmas meals. And this year we'll do over 20,000 children where we'll provide toys. And I think, John, it's really important for your listeners to understand that without the stuff that we do, none of these kids and none of these families have anything. And it's every time I say it, I kind of wonder whether people think I'm, telling a lie or something, but it's true. Within your listening audience, there's literally thousands and thousands of children and families that go without. Mm-hmm. So that's what we've been doing.
Yeah, and it's so stigmatized that, sadly, as you have learned in 25 years, and I've learned in almost 30 here on the program and working in journalism and public affairs and public service, this is not something people advertise. It's oftentimes... we utter the phrase, we never knew that you had it this bad, or we never knew it was like this. We always thought you were okay. And yeah. I guess part of the important message to get out is for people who are hearing this interview or who know somebody who might be able to benefit from an organization like Al's Angels, that there are organizations out there to help, and that better to ask sooner than to get so dug into a hole financially that it's putting the entire situation at risk.
Yep. Well, you talked about the collaboration. Dan Vieira is kind of a disciple of mine from way back. And, here's a guy who had a child that was, battling a rare blood disease. And, felt his association with other patients and what they were going through. He created Live Free. So I always look for ways in which we can, at Al's Angels, do all we can to kind of work with other organizations that are 501c3s to kind of broaden the reach and broaden the help. But you're right. A lot of these people kind of suffer in silence because they don't know that there's help out there for them. And, Dan has done a great job in terms of Live Free. The Westport PAL has done a great job in terms of helping kids in need. But I'm always on the prowl for organizations that are trying to do something that, are not, getting caught up in the bureaucratic stuff that's out there that just literally want to get stuff done.
Yeah. Well, let's come back and talk a little bit more about that and how people might be able to reach out to you. These days, there's a lot of foundations, a lot of corporations that are looking to get involved, especially with an effort that is tried and true and proven successful. So let's come back and talk more about Al's Angels. We've got a few more minutes with Al Guido. Stick with us, folks. We'll be right back. Hey, do you volunteer for or receive services from any of the hundreds of nonprofit agencies, community groups, and grassroots organizations in our region? Or maybe you're just looking for ways to help. If your favorite nonprofit is hosting a fundraiser or community building activity, or you'd like to find a nonprofit to support in your neighborhood, just go to our radio station website, hit the events tab, and find one, or discover some of the many causes supported by Connoisseur Media. I'm John Voquette, your public affairs director here at Connoisseur Media, and we'll be back to the award-winning For the People right after this news. Gilberti's Herbs Garden Center is once again going to be the place for the Westport Winter Farmers Market. The winter market opens Thursday, November 18th from 10 to 2 and runs every Thursday except Thanksgiving through March 10th. This is going to be an open-air market held throughout three greenhouses, and your favorite summer vendors are going to continue to provide high-quality, locally grown or raised fruits, vegetables, meats, cheeses, milk, baked and prepared foods, and handmade items. So come on down and see what the Westport Farmers Market has for you inside this winter. Or get more information at Westport Farmers Market. All right. Well, we are back with Al DeGuido of Al's Angels. You also heard a little bit earlier, and you'll hear again from Dan Vieira, one of the collaborators with Al's Angels, along with the Westport Police Athletic League, who we'll be talking to in just a couple of minutes, about this great event that's coming up on December 4th from 4 to 9 at the Westport PAL Rinks at Longshore. It's called a Winter Wonderland, and proceeds from this event and the opportunity to meet and learn more about these organizations, Live Free, Al's Angels, and the Westport Police Athletic League. So it's a great time to come out, bring the whole family, bring your friends, heck, bring your neighbors. There's going to be skating, carolers, a bonfire, crafts, cocoa, photos with Santa, and lots more excitement. No charge except for the skating, and of course donations are welcome, but also the opportunity to learn about how to get to know and maybe work with one of these organizations or volunteer for them. So Al, in terms of your situation, as we were saying before we went on the break, there's a lot of foundations, philanthropists, and businesses that are looking to partner with tried and true organizations that have a proven track record of success like yours. How does that work right for you?
Well, I mean, we welcome anyone, obviously, that wants to come in and make a contribution. They should know that there's no, for us, Al's Angels, there's no full-time employees. There's no pay to anybody. 100% of the money that we raise and that we solicit goes directly to helping more and more families in need. So, you know, if an organization wants to associate with us, we've been blessed that we have a number of organizations that are part of our tour drive, that are part of our Thanksgiving meals and our Christmas and Hanukkah meals. This year, we initiated a whole effort for COVID recovery, where we literally did a weekly food drive where area organizations that wanted to donate food provided it to us in front of our retail stores in Fairfield and Westport. And we went out to these different hard-hit areas where families who have been wiped out from COVID were able to receive food. But, I mean, we're 501c3. These organizations can step up and contact us at alsangels.org. They can reach me directly. We can give you an email there for me, 8deguido@yahoo.com, and we can connect with them. But again, it's really, really important to understand that 100% of the money that we raise goes directly to helping those in need. This organization was founded to provide that level of service and support to people who are suffering. So we know there's other organizations out there that do a great job, but for us, it's always meant nobody's even being paid. It's all going out to those who are in need.
All staffing, all overhead, all office everything. Space, all covered by Al DeGuido, with 100% of proceeds turning back around into the community and the folks who need it most. And as correct. We said, you can get to know these organizations better, find out how you can help more, make a donation, but basically just come on down and have a good time at this upcoming yep. event at the Westport PAL Rinks, 4 to 9 on December 4th. It'll be a great time. Great to be together again with other people after these crazy year and a half of madness with the pandemic, and we will hopefully see a ton of people coming out, Al. So in the meantime, thank you so much.
And you know what, John, just real quick, and while you're having fun, knowing that in your heart that your participation is actually helping people that are in need. So that's incredibly important. When you sit down for Thanksgiving dinner, all the folks that have donated to us, all the people that support these different events, will have in their heart the understanding that they did something, whatever at whatever level, they did something this year to help those in need. And that's a wonderful gift to give someone.
Well said. Thank you, Al. And we're going to go on and learn a little bit more about Westport PAL. And good luck with the event. So we're really pleased to connect with Officer Craig Bergamo. He is with the Westport Police Department and spokesperson for Westport PAL, the Police Athletic League. The Westport PAL is one of Westport's oldest youth organizations, established in 1948, a proud tradition of giving back to the community, steering kids away from the wrong path and toward the right one, developing community leaders in Westport and the greater Fairfield County area now for all these many years. And Craig is just the latest in the team of professionals who are helping make Westport PAL happen. Craig, welcome to the program. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me. Thank you very much.
So Craig was just saying he works the late night shift. So unfortunately, as we're taping this on Friday, we just woke him up out of a sound sleep. But it's for a good cause. Craig, tell us a little bit. It sounds like since Westport PAL is kind of the host for this organization, from your perspective, how did this all come together with Live Free and Al's Angels?
Well, basically with Daniel and Live Free, Daniel's amazing getting out there and doing events, and he's done an amazing job for the past I believe 5 or 6 years that Live Free has been around, maybe even a little bit longer. And I met Daniel a few years back, and I was helping him organize events and everything. And then once I became president this past February, him and me have been talking about doing something together. And what better way than to have the Winter Wonderland at the Westport PAL ice rink at Longshore in Westport.
Mm. So this ice rink is a cool place, both literally and figuratively, because it really is more than just like ice skating and hockey. It's more of like a community center, and it's like the Westport's equivalent of a gathering place where not only community members could come, but PAL can come with a number of the young people that they're working with. Tell me a little bit more about how PAL is changing the lives and setting so many young people on the right path.
Well, I mean, we give around 24 scholarships annually to kids from Westport and all around the area that do apply for our scholarships that are eligible. And it's something that we're proud that we're able to do. And I know with COVID and everything and us not being able to do the fireworks for the past couple of years, that's a big part of our funds to supply that, but we're doing little events as we can, our golf tournament and some other stuff to just make try to get that money back, and so we could help the people out there, help the kids, help other organizations, help organizations like Live Free or Al's Angels that need funding or something in that line.
Just
to help out.
Well, I see that one of the other staple activities for Westport PAL is a children's holiday party. Is that happening this year, or is this event kind of taking its place?
The holiday party is not happening this year, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. We had some issues with getting toys, and it just came down to it without the... Because we normally get a donation of toys, and without that donation, we weren't able to do the kids' holiday party, which is normally a fun thing. Myself, I dress up as Santa, and I ride the motorcycle for the police department. So I come in on a motorcycle. It's a nice little thing. The kids, it's a great thing to do. And unfortunately, we had the issue with the toys, and we couldn't do that this year.
Well, it sounds like Winter Wonderland could be a kind of a nice substitute for that. Certainly not the same logistically or practically, but still a way to bring the community together to kind of celebrate traditional wintertime and holiday activities and give all the people in attendance a chance to make donations and to get to know your organizations, because maybe you'll be able to peel off a number of them as dedicated volunteers who will kind of go on and support one or more of these nonprofits in the future.
Absolutely. And like I was saying, that's how I became involved with Daniels, from one of his events that he did. And I've been helping him for 3-4 years now. And it's, I mean, if you meet Daniel or Al, they're two amazing people who love to give back to the community. And I mean, what, you know, it's just, They're great people, and once you get to know them and know what they do in their organizations, there's nothing better. I mean, and the ice rink, where its location, you're looking out at the Long Island Sound, and it's a beautiful area right off the golf course, right by where the town pool is, and it's just an amazing location, and to have it for us to have it there. You know, working with Daniel and all that, with the Live Free and Al's Angels, it's great, you know.
And hopefully bringing now, thanks to some good promotion on your guys' part, bringing in people from hopefully all over Southern Connecticut to learn more and enjoy this no-cost holiday experience. The only charge is going to be for skating, as we heard from Dan. So, folks, if you want to learn more about Westport Pal, you can just go to westportpal.org online, and hopefully you'll be able to join them and Live Free and Al's Angels on December 4th from 4 to 9 at the Westport Pal rinks at Longshore. Skating, carolers, a bonfire, crafts, cocoa, photos with Santa, and more, all happening to support these three organizations and to spread the word about the good work that they do, including our brand new friend and guest, Craig Bergamo. Officer Craig Bergamo of Westport Police Department and the new head at Westport Pal. Great to meet you, Craig, and thanks so much for your service and for your volunteerism and support of this cause and these organizations. And we're going to swing it back for the last word from Dan Vieira to close out the show. So thank you again, Craig. All right. Well, that was a great, great opportunity to meet these other two wonderful nonprofits that are involved in this upcoming event happening on December 4th. We're back on the line for the last word with Dan Vieira. He is the founder of Live Free, which is providing support and experiences to the families and loved ones and those impacted by pediatric cancer, of offering unforgettable experiences. And if you want to find out more, you can go to liveliveFreeToday.org. So Dan, thanks for sticking with us. Before we say farewell to all three of you for the day, please remind people about coming out and getting involved in the Winter Wonderland.
Right. So please join us. Again, it's December 4th between 4 and 9 p.m. Ice skating starts around 5:30, and just come out and help us get into the holiday spirit. We'll have ice skating. We'll have an appearance from Santa. We'll have holiday carols, a campfire with the Westport Fire Department, and much more. It's going to be a fun time for the whole family to just really get involved and get into the spirit of the holidays.
Is this a donation situation for people who want to come out?
So this is open to the public. The only donation is for ice skating, and any other donation that you'd like to come and donate to our individual missions. But other than that, it's free to the public to enjoy the bonfire and the caroling and Santa.
And people will also get a chance to meet you and our other representatives from the nonprofits that this is benefiting. So we want to thank you, Dan, and our other guests for joining us this morning. Best of luck with this upcoming event, this Winter Wonderland in Westport on December 4th from 4 to 9. We hope a bunch of people come out and learn more about your individual organizations and support them all. So thank you so much. Well, we chatted with him back in April as we were kind of beginning to look at the next new potential wave of refugees that would be coming into the United States and to Connecticut. But since then, a lot has happened, including the U.S. military withdrawal from Afghanistan, which produced the humanitarian crisis of our time. Since then, we have had the pleasure of already welcoming several hundred Afghan refugees, many of whom have members who were supporting U.S. operations. They were fixers. They were translators, go-betweens, many of them responsible for sustaining and protecting and saving the lives of our U.S. service people and United States government officials and others who are working in Afghanistan. So when we heard the latest call from Governor Lamont to not only make these individuals welcome here in Connecticut, but a plea to landlords to open up their homes and perhaps riffing off of that for others who might have a place for these refugees to open up those places to them. So we decided to get back with Chris George. He's executive director of IRIS, which is Integrated Refugee and Immigrant Services. They are one of two major organizations in the state of Connecticut that are working with these Afghan refugees coming in. Refugee families who arrive from overseas come to the United States often with virtually no material possessions. They've lost their home, their friends, their family, their country, their culture, and their jobs. Most don't speak English, and they have no income, and many are victims of trauma with physical or mental health needs. And IRIS provides targeted wraparound services for all these clients using a strength-based assessment model that offers long-term support for successful integration. So beyond the boilerplate, Chris, tell us a little bit about where we are as we're taping this here on the 12th of November. We were expecting like 800 to 1,000 in Connecticut or more. How many are here with us in our neighborhoods already?
Well, you're right, John. The Taliban takeover of Afghanistan changed everything. And as you said, any Afghan who had any connection at all, whether they were an interpreter for special forces at one end of the spectrum, or they ran the laundry service at the Marine base in Kandahar, no matter what their connection with the U.S. government, they felt they were in danger. They were in danger of being targeted by the Taliban, they and their family members. So as many as could fled to the airport, managed to make it through that crazy, chaotic gauntlet, and got on planes. And the U.S. government is trying to resettle about 100,000 Afghans across the United States. Connecticut has so far welcomed about 250 in just roughly 2 months. 250 would be a relatively large number of refugee arrivals for a year. Mm-hmm. And we have done that number in just 2 months. Normally we have 2 or 3 weeks notice before a family comes. Now we're lucky if we have 2 or 3 days notice. In the past, usually one family at a time would arrive. Now, in some cases, we've been welcoming 4 or 5 families on one day. So it's a pretty crazy time for refugee resettlement agency, not just IRIS in Connecticut, but all of the 200 or so refugee agencies across the country are being asked to do some pretty heroic work.
Yeah, depending on depending on the size of their jurisdiction, the incoming onslaught of refugees is proportional. So we're talking about some agencies that are handling, probably approaching, 8 or 10,000.
Some single agencies are going to approach about 2,000.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. All right. But I mean, you're right. It has been really difficult. It's not the total number. I mean, resettling 100,000 refugees in 1 year can be done. That's not outrageous. But to resettle them over a four-month period is really difficult. And you mentioned one of the major bottlenecks, which is housing.
Yeah. Well, we've only got about three or four more minutes with you, Chris. So essentially this call, which is going to be the first of a number that we're going to have with you and other agencies in Connecticut over the next few months, is really kind of going to be kicking off a series on opening our homes and hearts to our refugees, particularly those who are of service in some way, shape, or form to protecting and sustaining our American forces and others in country. Mm-hmm. So what are the most important things that you could ask for right now of people here in Connecticut?
Right now, the big ask is form a group. If you can do it, if you live in a community where there are a number of people who would like to roll up their sleeves and welcome a Afghan refugee family to their community, then form a group, contact IRIS. We will train you, and we will place a refugee family in your community a month later. And it is the most rewarding, satisfying, and challenging community project you will ever do. And already more than 30 groups across the state of Connecticut have stepped forward.
So if if people want to know more, they can go to IRISCT.org to get connected and learn more about how IRIS is doing their work. Sorry to interrupt you.
No, that's right. We call this community-based resettlement or community co-sponsorship. Most refugee agencies across the country will resettle refugees with their staff, sometimes with a few volunteers helping here and there. But we've got this model in Connecticut that's been very successful, and it's now being replicated across the country, where we take a community group, train them, and they do everything. I mean, everything my staff does, the community group does. They'll find the apartment, they'll furnish the apartment, they'll welcome the family, they'll meet them at the airport, they'll get the kids enrolled in school, the members of the family connected to health care, they'll help the parents learn English, and they'll help the parents get jobs. And they can do this. I mean, members of these groups are experienced people. They've got great life skills, which includes enrolling kids in school, connecting people to health care, helping them get jobs. So it is something that is definitely doable for a handful of people from a community in Connecticut.
And it's almost inconceivable for people here in Connecticut and in the United States to think that something went horribly wrong in their country and suddenly they and their families' lives were in danger and they had to suddenly rip themselves out of their home and their lifestyle and go to a completely different foreign country, possibly for the rest of their lives. It's important for people to empathize and try to put themselves in the shoes and the places of these refugees in order to try to relate and find the inspiration to step up, find or form one of these groups and make it happen. And it's great to know that IRIS is there to help. And I'm glad that you're such an important and willing resource for our program, Chris. So we're looking forward to talking with you again in a few weeks to learn more about specifics, maybe to meet a few of these groups, just to help continue to familiarize people with how easy it is, but how important it is for them to step up right now on behalf of these, 800 to 1,000. Six or seven more hundred refugees who are going to be coming in the coming months. So thank you so much for your time at this point. And once again, folks, if you want to learn more, go to IRISCT.org. And Chris, George, for now, we thank you so much for your work and your group's work, and we will be back in touch soon.
You've been listening to our award-winning public affairs program, For the People. The opinions expressed on this broadcast represent those of our guests and host. If you have a suggestion for an issue, a guest, or a PSA relevant to the audience and community served by our radio station, you must make a request for consideration in writing to me via email at john.voquette@connoisseurct.com. We do not accept pitches or requests for coverage by phone. Remember, no part of this program may be copied, disseminated, or rebroadcast. Our public file detailing the many critical community and state issues addressed on For the People can be reviewed upon request during normal business hours at 440 Wheeler's Farms Road in Milford or on our station website. Our theme music is by Rick Miller and Scott's, with original music by Noel Viette. I'm Director of Public Affairs, John Voquette. Join us again this time next week for more conversation and information on the award-winning For the People. And don't forget, you can listen to this and other For the People podcasts anytime on iTunes or under the podcast tab on our station's website. Until this time next week, thanks for listening.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.